Hey, teacher friends, I want to make sure that you know about my two children's books from the Caring Critters series, Felipe the Feeling Frog and Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle. These children's books are invaluable tools for teaching social-emotional skills in your classroom. In Felipe the Feeling Frog, kids walk alongside Felipe as he discovers that all feelings are okay, and he learns practical strategies for regulating his emotions. Felipe and his friends in the book help children identify and manage feelings like sadness, happiness, frustration, making emotional learning engaging and relatable. Then there's Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle, where Trixie explores the difference between expected and unexpected choices. Through her journey, children learn how to make thoughtful decisions that positively affect their friends and understand the importance of respectful behavior. Both books feature the charming illustrations of Denise Walker, which bring these important lessons to life in a way that kids can easily connect with. And they're written by me, a kindergarten teacher who understands the social-emotional needs of young students. Enhance your classroom with Felipe the Feeling Frog and Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle, and watch your students thrive in their social-emotional development with the Caring Critters series. Hey everyone, it's Siba from Kindergarten Cafe, and today's episode is a guest interview with Mona from Hello Mona Math. And she is talking through with me how to make the best of your new curriculums. I have heard from so many teachers about new curriculums, not liking the curriculums, and I am in the same boat. I have a new math curriculum and not a fan at all. It's been a rough transition. And so this conversation is real and honest, and you know, we have a great conversation. So I hope that you can get something out of it. And if you do, send me a DM on Instagram at Kindergarten Cafe, code word math. Let me know what you think about it. Let me know how you feel about your curriculum. I'd love to hear from you. So without further ado, here is our conversation. You're listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast, where kindergarten teachers come to learn classroom-tested tips and tricks and teaching ideas they can use in their classroom right away. I'm Ziba, creator and founder of Kindergarten Cafe, and I help kindergarten teachers with everything they need from arrival to dismissal in order to save time, work smarter, not harder, and support students with engaging and purposeful lessons. I'm here to cheer you on through your successes and breakthroughs and offer support and resources so you never have to feel stuck or alone. Ready to start saving time and reducing your stress, all while using effective and purposeful lessons that students love? Let's get started. Hi, everyone. I have Mona here today, and I'm really excited because I've been chatting with Mona for like a year now.
Yeah.
A while now on Instagram and Facebook. But Mona has an awesome math podcast where she helps elementary school math teachers with math, all things math. That is the Honest Math Chat podcast. And I was actually a guest on it, probably your highest rated episode ever.
Absolutely.
But welcome, Mona. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Hi. Okay. Yes, I'm so excited to be here. I feel like this is all coming together because we've been talking about the kindergarten podcast situation for while. And so look at it. It's just doing it. We're doing it.
Finally
now.
Here.
Yay. I'm so honored to be here and be a guest. And I'm Mona. So I have been a elementary teacher for 15 years. This is my 16th year in education. And all of those years have been spent in Chicago Public Schools. And let's say the first third of those teaching years, I was teaching elementary like the rest of us. And teaching all the subjects, and math was my least favorite subject to teach.
I did not know that about you.
Really? Oh, yeah. I call myself a math avoider, a former math avoider now, because my whole schooling, I just avoided math. Cheated my way through high school math, did the bare minimum, always did my homework before I got home, or didn't do it, and then got the answers from somebody sitting near me. So yeah, so if you would have told me at the beginning of my teaching career that I would have a math podcast, I would have called you crazy. And everything changed though when I was introduced to teaching math in the same kinds of ways that I taught everything else. Like I loved teaching integrated units, right? Mm-hmm. And bringing picture books to life with my students and having these discussions about big life things through a picture book, right? And morning meeting and getting kids talking and building community and relationships and giving students experiences where they could make sense of it, right? We did that in science. We did that in social studies. We did that with reading and writing. But then I got to math and it was like, okay, get out your workbooks, turn to page 37, and let's just get this over with so we can get out of the fun stuff, right? Then I had a math coach who was like, actually, there's decades of research that show if kids experience real world problems and discuss them, they can actually learn math. And I was like, no way. No, that's not true. And so I dove into that research and got really good at teaching math this way, student-centered way. And now I'm on this mission to like spread the word because I feel like too many elementary school teachers are miserable in their math class like I was. And so I'm here to share there's a different way.
I love it. And it's funny, I hated math as a kid too. I was not good at it because it was taught in a way that was memorize this. And that's not how my brain works. So like I couldn't do it fast. And I have this vivid memory of like them teaching me one way to multiply because I wasn't getting it the traditional way, something with squares and stuff. But then I got to fifth grade and they're like, no, you're not allowed to do that anymore because that's too slow. And I was like, So it just was downhill from there. And then in high school, it was in like a separate program that they were like trying out that was based on real world problems. Like it was exactly what the other kids were learning. It was just in a more problem solving way. And it started to click. But I was that kid being like, excuse me, when am I going to need to know this as a kindergarten teacher? I'm not paying attention.
You already knew. Linear equations do not apply to five. No.
But then I started teaching math. And I loved it. I loved teaching math because I was teaching in a way that like actually made sense to the kids. Teaching the upper grades to like second and third grade, I'm like, oh, I'm starting to understand things more myself. Isn't that great?
Yes. Yes.
But like math was one of my favorite times of day and I loved it. And we had a lot more like free range and like I could like make my lessons the way I wanted. Like I knew it, like I needed to teach them, but like I could do it the way I wanted. And Mona, you and I have been talking about how I have this new curriculum this year, and it's a big shift, and I am not a fan. And it's really hard because math is now my very least favorite time of day. And I know so many other teachers out there are switching curriculums. I see it in the Facebook groups. I see them talking about like changing curriculums, hating what they have, being frustrated with change. And you're out there helping teachers right now with dealing with all these changes and things and making the best of it. So I thought we could start our talk on that.
I love it. Let's just tackle the big things. Well, I think like what you were describing about the way we were taught math is one of the biggest problems, right? Because we are trying to now change a system that we are a product of. Mm-hmm. So even when we were in teacher school, right? Our teacher ed programs, I remember being taught for like how to teach math was like, you get your curriculum and you read it. Like that was like, right. And then there are these things called manipulatives and they're going to change your students' experience. But I wasn't taught how to teach math in a problem-solving way or in a conceptual way or to teach students about number sense. Those were all things that I didn't learn as a child, which contributed to me not liking math as well. I also was never given the opportunity to speak much in math, right? Mm-hmm. When did you get to speak in math? When you raised your hand with the right answer. And if you didn't have the right answer, you kept your hand down because you didn't want to be embarrassed.
I raised my hand with questions.
See, and you were like a brave one.
Yeah, but it didn't help. Because they would just be like, well, ask so-and-so because they know the answer.
Yeah, ask the kids who are, quote, good at math, right? The boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's first, right? So then what we do as teachers is we get really good at the curriculum we have. And we are comfortable with it. We know it. And there's some comfort in that. And so a lot of times, though, the curriculums that we're using aren't great, right? They're not. And if we really dive into them, we can see that there's not enough in context problems for our students. So as you're looking at your curriculum, ask yourself, I always call them naked numbers. Are your students just practicing with naked numbers? My kid came home with some 3+4 problems. And I was like, where's the 10 frame? What's going on? You know, yes, a 10 frame, but also three what? What are we talking about? Three what? Because to a kindergartner, it's important that we're talking about three kids are on the slide and four more come. And that's 7. And we all know the rule is 5 on the slide. And then that's too many. So 2 have to get off, whatever. Like, they know those things, right? And so when we talk to them about that, they can get it. But if we're just like, here are some random numbers and symbols, figure it out. We're missing a step.
Yeah. And I'll be like the first to admit, like, what we had wasn't great. But over the years, the teachers adapted it and made it good. And now that's what we're used to. And I think the struggle for me and my teachers that, you know, I teach with are that we had made it so developmentally appropriate. And we're feeling like in this, I feel like this is true for everything in kindergarten, basically, that elementary and early childhood are just very different. Mm-hmm. And because kindergarten's in the elementary school building, it gets pushed into the elementary range. And it's so they're asking kids to learn in a way that upper elementary kids are. And there's so many things throughout the day where that's the case. Like right now in math, it's just not feeling developmentally appropriate. And I'm missing my old way of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I have this entire guide that I created just because of things like this, because teachers are like, but I know how to teach it in a way that's exciting and that I love it, but I'm not allowed to or whatever. And I function from the ask for forgiveness, not for permission. That's mm-hmm. just because I'm a rule breaker, which is another reason why I was never good at math. So I think as teachers, we have to view our curriculum as one resource in our stockpile of tools that we use to reach our students. And so curriculum is one, standards are another, engagement strategies are another, picture books and like story is another, right? Play, another. Did I already mm-hmm. say that? I said it twice on a kindergarten podcast, but
absolutely.
Those are all things that we can draw on. And I think the best resource in our classroom is our knowledge of our students. And so if you know your students can use a 5 frame in August and September, and then you see, oh, they've got that and they're ready for the next push and they're ready for 10 frames in October, but the curriculum doesn't introduce it until unit 5 and we're in March, then you give them the 10 frame when they're ready. It's the same thing as saying, okay, I might get under some fire here. So this is why I'm like stuttering. So, you know, there's a set of kindergarten teachers that I've interacted with that are like, we don't teach any reading until after Christmas. We don't teach any letters. We don't teach any reading until after Christmas. Okay. And I understand the reasoning behind that, right? Like, it's play, it's learn how to be at school, it's sit in a chair, it's play with, be kind to your friend. It's all these things that we have to learn as we're entering kindergarten. But if you have a kid who's like already there and meeting these expectations, we wouldn't just hold them back per se from what they're ready for. Like, mm-hmm. what they're ready for is what they're ready for. And yeah, that's a differentiating nightmare, but also that's like what we're good at, right? Like, especially in kindergarten and early childhood, where the range of needs and abilities are so great, you know your kids the best. And so you developing lessons and environments that meet their needs is the best resource in the classroom. End rant.
And so what do you recommend to teachers like me who don't know the curriculum well enough to really effectively adapt it to what they know the kids need?
Mm-hmm.
My struggle is, yeah, I've read like the unit overview, but like I have not sat and read through every single lesson in the unit yet. And so I'm like, I don't know, is that coming up? And like, I don't have the full vision. And so I don't feel like I'm in a place where I can make big changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that is a reality, right? That there is value in seeing a curriculum through and like seeing, okay, this is how they say to teach it and trying it out. But I think that it's important to use things like pre-assessments. So your unit might have an end of assessment that you should look at and see. Mm-hmm. Do all of my students know how to do that? Because I bet in the first few units of whatever curriculum you use, it's going to do counting cardinality standards. And so you, while students are playing, can very easily assess if students have one-to-one correspondence, if they know that the quantity is the last number that they say. Like some of those basic counting and cardinality standards, you can assess. If your students know those, then we can look at that unit a little bit differently and not walk it lockstep, but say, okay, what are the pieces of this unit that fit with the needs of my students? Is that more planning? Yeah. Anytime you get a new curriculum, it's going to be tons more planning, right? But I think matching what you know about your students with what you know about the standards, regardless of the curriculum, you have to know the standards. Mm-hmm. I think that is maybe another place to start. And so that when you're reading those unit overviews, you can say, oh, okay, this whole thing is about making 10. Great. Here's all the ways I know that we can practice making 10, right? And then you can look at what the curriculum is offering and then decide. I think a lot of curriculums nowadays are giving you way more than what mm-hmm. into your day.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So you, no matter what, have to make some choices. And sometimes that's you making the choices. Sometimes that's math coaches. Sometimes that's district people. Mm-hmm. But regardless, our classrooms have doors. Every single one of us went into teaching because we want to be in charge. You might not admit that to your friends and family, but that's the truth.
They would admit that to you, that I want to be in charge. That's a well-known fact.
Right? I mean, like, I'm a teacher. I'm in charge. Let's go. Everybody listen up. So it's like, your classroom has a door and you get to choose. At the end of the day, that's what it is.
Like, close your door and do what's best for kids in front of you. That's what you're saying.
I mean, yes, that is what I always say. I always say, do what's right for kids. Mm-hmm. I function on a student-centered mission, which is students first, students always. Like, that's what it is. And so I think linking your lessons to your data is something that no one is going to argue with you about. Mm-hmm. If you have an assessment that says every kid in my class has one-to-one correspondence, I do not need to do the first four lessons of this unit because it all focuses on one-to-one. Who's going to argue with you about that? No one. Mm. Because here's the thing. I'm also a math coach and I've been a consultant for districts, right? Nobody that's a math coach or a district leader wants you to teach students lessons that are ineffective.
Yeah.
Everybody has the same goal. Everybody wants kids learning and making tremendous growth. Maybe sometimes the goals for growth are a little out of whack. But everybody wants students to make growth and everybody wants what's best for students, right? If the choices you're making are based on what's best for students, then come on, let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah, I agree. It has to come down to what's best for kids. I also know the struggle of the inner struggle of like being a rule follower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's totally real. That's totally real.
That's me. I'm like, I can't, you know, break the rule, but because I'm a rule follower. But then at the same time, I'm like, no, this is what my kids need. So I'm doing this. Right. But then I'm constantly looking over my shoulder being like, someone going to come notice. But if you can advocate, if you can say like, the reason behind this is, like you said, based on the data, based on my observations of my students, based on what I know my students need. If you can advocate that to whoever says anything, no one really questions that usually.
Yes, I agree with you. And so some of the ways I think you can do that are like linking your lessons to things that bring you joy. Because if you are standing in front of your class, clicking through slides that are mm-hmm. pre-made from your curriculum that have a bunch of words that your kids can't read, mm-hmm. then there's obviously some animosity coming through, right? Your yeah. eyes, your body language, your hard clicking through the slides. Mm-hmm. So bringing in some creativity, some joy for yourself. And so I've seen some teachers just ditch the slides altogether, right? Not even a developmentally appropriate for kindergarten. And so let's just tell them the story, right? Like, let's not like even like read the slide. Let's just tell them the story because we know they love story.
That will also help with the fact that the visuals are completely misleading because they have completely different amounts. And then the kids get very confused about the numbers and the stories.
Right. And so I think that's the other piece of not trusting resources too much, because mm-hmm. we have to remember that curriculum companies are businesses. They are selling a K-8, a K-5, a pre-K-8, whatever. They're selling that. And if they can get K in there, if they can get 6-8 in there, they're making things to make it all happen, mm-hmm. right? And so slides included with your curriculum is a huge selling point, right? They're pre-made lessons. They're ready to go. Teachers can just click through. That does not mean that they are high quality, right? Don't trust that something is going to be great. You have to go through it. You have to check. They better be editable or you should just never even open the dang things.
Well, you could make a copy, I suppose, and then they're editable. Yeah. But I've been feeling a lot this year like the art of teaching is really endangered because teachers are just blindly. And like I said, I'm clicking on the slides. I'm reading it because I don't know what I'm doing yet. But like, I also in the core, I'm like, this is bad teaching. And I just feel like teachers coming in, picking up these boxes that maybe don't have the experience before of like making their own lessons or whatever, they're losing the ability to make their own judgment calls. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, but all curriculum is like that, really. Like, no matter the program you have, it's prescriptive.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about having the courage, having the confidence to say, I know what's best for students. I have those teaching strategies. And for so many of us elementary teachers, we feel so strong in those strategies for reading and writing. And we've been collecting books since we were freshmen in high school for mm-hmm. our one day, you know, classroom. But like math is just not innate. Math teaching isn't innate to us because so many of us have experiences like you and I described, right? And so our longest experience is how long we spent in the classroom as a student. And so when we're a brand new teacher, we have all of that to draw. So many teachers that I've coached have been like, well, I teach math in the afternoon because when I was growing up, it was always in the afternoon. And it's like, well, it doesn't have to be in the afternoon. Like,
I teach math in the afternoon because that's when I'm told to teach math is in the afternoon. And guess what? We're not doing it anymore in the afternoon after this year.
It doesn't really work in the afternoon. No. I'll be honest with you. It's pretty difficult.
Okay. So talking about like being good teachers and like trusting your instincts, you talk so much about conversations and the importance of getting kids to talk. And I love everything you have to say about that. I also know my kids, developmentally appropriate practice, five-year-olds, they can't sit on the rug for long. And this is where I'm like, our new program does a lot of student talk, a lot of sitting on the rug and talking. What would you say to someone like me trying to balance all that? Because in kindergarten, like, I see the benefit in getting kids to talk and like having them do more of the work. Like, I get it. It's hard transition, but they're sitting on the rug for too long and it's not development appropriate. And then they're having behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first of all, curriculum doesn't teach you classroom management or a lot of these important elements to make these moves happen. And so that's why whenever I'm teaching teachers how to have math discussions, I'm also teaching them about engagement. I'm also teaching them about community building because it all has to go together. You cannot have a math discussion unless you have some really high and practiced expectations, unless you have norms, unless you have all of these things in place for your students. So let's just take it kindergarten. They shouldn't be at the rug for longer than they're capable of, right? And like, you have to build their stamina. And that means starting with just a couple minutes. And even though the curriculum's like, have them turn and talk, have them discuss, have them mm-hmm. turn and talk, have them discuss. It's like, yes, and, right? And there has to be other things in place, which the curriculum isn't spelling out for us. And so, for example, students solve a problem, like an adjoining problem, right? An addition problem about birds in a tree, and more birds come. And now there's how many birds are in the tree? You might present that problem to the students, and then they might go back to their seats because they have to get up and move, right? The first step is like, listen, talk to your friend about what's going on in the tree, right? For 3 minutes. And then they go back to their seats and they explore it. And then the curriculum might say, now have a math discussion. But first, maybe we should try like two more problems so that we can all come back to the carpet at one time and have one big math discussion instead of like, do you know how sometimes it'll be like, solve a problem, discuss, solve a problem, discuss, solve a problem, discuss. And it's like, that's too many transitions physically.
Preach. Yes.
So having maybe a structure for, we're not coming back to the carpet to discuss, but after a birds problem, we're going to sit at our table. And then as kindergarten teachers, and I know we all do, have these really clear structures for how kids move and talk and use materials and all of these things that make independence possible with five-year-olds, right? And so you have a routine for how kids talk to the person sitting at the table across from them. After they solve the bird problem, they talk for 30 seconds and they show their picture and they point to two things and they show how they solved it. Done. And then we move on to the next problem, you know, and you tell them the story. Now we're talking about kids in a pool. There are some kids swimming in the pool. Some more jump in. Now how many kids are in the pool? Okay, everybody's going to use their manipulatives and solve the problem. Same thing. Okay, we got it. Maybe we have our whiteboards. I don't know. Hold up your whiteboard to your partner. You have 30 seconds. Show what's in your picture. Point to two things and tell them how you solved, right? Or if it's a paper, one side is birds, one side is kids in pools. Done. Yeah. And then maybe we solve a third problem. I don't know. Sometimes there's three problems. We solve a third problem. And then after that is when we come back to the carpet and we have maybe a 4 minute conversation. And at that point, it's about somebody else's strategy. So you say, you know, I saw so-and-so do this, and it's already up. You know, you're going to write it up real quick. And then we're going to talk about somebody else's strategy.
Okay, so real quick, and we can probably like, I could literally talk to you about this forever because I just feel like you're solving my math problems. But we'll probably wrap it up after this, and maybe we'll just have to come back. But when they're on the rug and you're having this 4 minute discussion, which I'm doing every day, except it's more like it's longer than 4 minutes. I need, you know, I need to work on like, I don't have to like stretch it out. I need to just, I can chop it off. But how do you get all the kids to talk? Like they all turn and talk. That's fine. They can all talk to their partner. But if I want kids to share, it is the same three hands every time raising their hand to answer. And everyone else is zoned out.
Yep. Number one is we work on being math active listeners or whatever way you talk about that. And that becomes a focus for math for the next 2 weeks. I literally don't care what's being said. I'm just praising and noticing listening. That's like Johnny is sitting with his legs folded. Alice has her eyes on the speaker. George, way to go. I can see you're listening with your body, whatever. Like it's nothing about the math. It's just about the listening to math. And then giving kids ways to participate that aren't speaking, because kids need to show that they have an idea, right? So then that's when they just start screaming out, or they like, they've already been shut down. They can't scream out their idea. So now they are checked out and rolling. And so when you give them like the silent signals, right? Like, I agree. I did that too in sign language, like the me too thing signal, or I disagree, or, you know, any signal like, I did it a different way. I have students put their thumb up and on their knee, on their crisscross applesauce leg, on their knee when they have an idea to share.
Yep, same.
And so I will praise that. Look at all the ideas we have to share. Great, moving on. Boom, you know, next one, whatever. Okay, so that, number one, focus on listening and making it easier to listen by being able to show your thinking while you're listening. And then number two is cold calls. And I know that sounds crazy for kindergarten because you're like, no, those poor little babies aren't ready. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. Because if you get a five-year-old by themselves,
Yeah.
Even the shyest five-year-old's got a bunch of things to say to you. I volunteer in my kids' kindergarten class, and there's a little girl who barely speaks, like barely speaks at all. And every single time I'm in there and we're like alone, because she's always the last one in the hallway, I'm always the last one in the hallway trying to make her come on, she always murmurs things to me because kids love to talk. So I think we have to just keep that in mind of what do we need to do in our classrooms to make it safe so that everybody talks. Things that you can say to kids are like, you know what? We're going to call on each other. I'm going to call on you. Your friends are going to call on you. That's another way to get other kids to participate. Mm. Kids call on each other. So if Alice finishes speaking, I hold up three fingers. And when my three fingers are gone, you have to call on someone. If you haven't called on someone, by the time my fingers are down, I will call on someone.
Mm. I can see that being very engaging for my class.
Yeah, they're going to call on their best friend. And so then you set it up as a norm of like, you can be called on even when you're not raising your hand or putting a thumb on your knee. You can be called on anytime because it's our job to always be thinking in math, mm-hmm. always be ready. And you can share whatever you want. You can share, oh, the math strategy is written in like drawn with circles, or it's written in red marker. You can share whatever you want, but you have to be ready to share. And so just focusing on some of those like discussion norms mm-hmm. first, and worrying less about the math.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, that's going to be my lesson tomorrow.
I love it. Let me know how it goes. Yeah. Tag me on Facebook or tag me on Instagram.
I will. And I usually do like a quote of the day. And I just on the spot thought of this. I just thought I'd tell you, you know, because we're talking about discussion that, you know, Miss Grinch over here not wanting to do the new curriculum, not seeing the benefit of it, all the complaints, like literally I could list 100 negativities. But I gave the prompt, like the routine, we kind of got into a little bit of a routine where it was with the word problems, where we said, you know, tell your partner the story, and then they tell each other the story. And then the next question I asked was like, how are we going to act it out? Are we going to use cubes? Or, you know, and let them come up with the ideas. But the idea is like cubes or fingers or whatever. So I said the story problem and I said, okay, turn and talk to your partner. And this one group was talking and they finished telling the story. It wasn't a long story before some of the other groups. And I just listen in and I hear them go, okay, so, and how should we act out the problem? We could use cubes. We could use each other. We could use our fingers. Yeah, I think we could act it out like that. I was like, oh my gosh, kind of working.
I love it. I love it. That's great. Yeah. And I think the more that you see that kids are embracing it for themselves, the more empowering it is to us to let them do it, right? It feels really hard at first to let kids lead, right? Because in our brains, we're like, but if I just told them and mm-hmm. showed them how to do it, they'd be doing it. And that's not really learning. That's just telling, right? And we know that kids don't learn by telling.
It's a really hard shift. And that could be a whole other podcast about like really letting kids struggle. Like that is like, I have to stop myself from talking to you and letting you figure it out. But Mona, where could people find you for when they're ready to complain about their curriculums and ask you for help?
Yes. Okay. First thing, if you are hating math class at this moment, you have to go to monamath.com/love and download the Teach Math Like You Love It Even If You Don't guide. I've got 6 or 7 strategies in there for just like ways to help you love math, even if you don't like it. But yeah, so I have a podcast every Monday. You can listen to a new mini free PD on Honest Math Chat. And I'd love to connect with you on Instagram and chat about your math curriculum and questions you have and pushback. I love pushback. I love a good debate. That's why I was never good at math, because we could never debate, but it is a new world. And we can debate in math now. So anyway, send me a message on Instagram at Hello Mona Math.
Awesome. And we'll put all those links down below. But thanks so much, Mona.
Yeah, this was so fun. I love when we get to talk about real problems. This felt like a real conversation, not like a podcast.
Yeah, because it is real. It is real to me.
That's right. Two teachers just hanging out, chatting math problems.
And I know I'm not alone. I know there's teachers out there being like, finally, someone who understands.
I love it. I love it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information and resources, or just head straight to kindergartencafe.org for all the goodies. If you liked this episode, the best ways to show your support are to subscribe, leave a review, or send it to a friend. I'll be back next week with even more kindergarten tips. See you then.